It's the Morning Show. I'm John Munson. Time for our Week in Review. Each Friday morning at this time, we take a look at the top news stories of the week from a couple of different political perspectives. And let's start by introducing the guests. Kevin Hermaning is the chair of the Republican Party of Marathon County and a financial planner from Wausau. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, and thank you for the invitation to join you and your listeners this morning.
And Arvina Martin is a member of the Madison Common Council and former chair of the American Indian Caucus for the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Arvina, welcome to the morning show and Week in Review.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so to our listeners, 800-642-1234, the number to call to join the conversation. Tell us how you feel about the top stories of the week. Congress averts a government shutdown, the tax bill, lots of stuff to chew on this morning, and we welcome your thoughts as we go along here. But let's get right into it. There won't be a government shutdown tonight as Congress managed to kick the can down the road for another month. Yesterday, both houses passed a stopgap measure that funds the government until January 19th. It also provides a short-term funding fix for the Children's Health Insurance Program, whose financing expired in September, but didn't touch hot-button issues like immigration, surveillance, and health care. Kevin, it's good the shutdown was avoided, or should conservatives have held out for those things that were important to them?
Well, I think it's good that they averted the shutdown, but there were some other things missing from the bill as well. All of the important spending that was necessary with regard to military improvement, for example, the repair of the warships that were damaged in the last 7 to 12 months. There are a lot of Republicans not happy with. In fact, I saw a quote by one of the Alaska congressmen talking about how bitterly disappointed he and some of his colleagues were that the Republicans didn't go far enough. But it's understandable given the terrible optics that would occur. Passing legislation because of optics is not a positive thing. But, they've got a lot to celebrate this week. And the last 3 weeks have been a very good period of time for President Trump and the Republicans. And I'm sure we'll maybe even talk about Jerusalem once again today.
Arvina, what's your take on this?
Well, I'm disappointed that there wasn't any fix for the Dreamers. I know that was a very big issue for a lot of the Democrats that are in Congress and in the Senate. There was good disaster funding for Puerto Rico. And Texas, but there wasn't anything for the victims of the fire in Santa Monica that just happened, which is one of the biggest fires and biggest disasters in that state's history.
President Trump tweeted yesterday that Democrats want a shutdown in order to throw a bucket of water on the tax cuts that Republicans passed. Arvina, what do you think of that?
You know, I think that Democrats don't need to throw a bucket of water on that. It's a pretty unpopular piece of legislation. Most people are anti this particular tax bill, and it looks like the Republicans in Congress and in the Senate are having a hard enough time agreeing amongst themselves. The Democrats don't really need to do anything.
So we've got this budget fix done. Everybody can go home and have their Christmas. But when they come back, we've got that January 19th deadline approaching. Arvina, what do you think is the next big budget fight? What's that going to be like as this new deadline approaches?
Well, I think that people are going to be really pushing in particular for more of that emergency funding for the folks in Santa Monica. And I do think that Democrats are really going to push a more long-term fix for the Dreamers as well as for the CHIP program. That it has been unfunded since September is really, really bad. And it needs a more permanent solution so that the kids aren't going without health insurance.
Kevin, what would you like to see, or how would you like to see Republicans handle this next deadline? It seems like we're always looking at these. There's just going to be another one here, January 19th. What do you think the Republicans need to do here to show that they can govern?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that they can govern or they wouldn't have been able to pass a piece of legislation. I love the characterization by it in the fake news media that it was narrowly averted, meaning the government shutdown. The vote was 230 to 180 in the House, which is a pretty vast margin, and the vote was over 65 in the, I believe, 62 in the U.S. Senate. So it was a pretty good coming together by Republicans to pass legislation, even if it was only for a three-week period of time. If we can carve together some of the important pieces of legislation, you know, Arvina talked about how, quote, unpopular the tax cut bill is. I and other Republicans, especially as chair of the county party in Marathon County, am going to remind voters consistently over the course of the next year that not a single, not one Democrat voted for the tax cut bill. And already we're seeing the result of the trickle-down efforts, the trickle-down results, I should say, of corporate America knowing that they've got some additional money in their pocket now, that the money does not belong to government. And this is the same message that Republicans in the House and Senate are going to need to bring to the table in just 3 weeks when they're talking about military spending, when they're talking about bringing to the table President Trump's promise to deal with the DACA bill. The Democrats, they're the ones who are facing the heat right now from the Dreamers, because after all, every important Democrat leader promised a government shutdown or resolution to the DACA issue, and it didn't happen by Christmas. There's a lot of disappointed people right now.
So the White House says there's a very good chance that President Trump will sign the tax cuts bill into law today. Republicans passed the package this week, which drops the corporate tax rate from 35 to 21%, cuts individual rates for the next 8 years, and nearly doubles the standard deduction. We have some audio that we're going to play here. Here's what President Trump had to say about the accomplishment.
This bill means more take-home pay. It will be an incredible Christmas gift for hardworking Americans. I said I wanted to have it done before Christmas. We got it done.
And he also said that the cuts ultimately mean jobs, 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 jobs. Kevin, you're a financial planner. Do you think people are going to appreciate these cuts and tweaks?
I think people from AT&T to Wells Fargo to First Third Bank, all of the tellers, all of the maintenance workers, everybody who is doing any kind of job right now is going to have more money in their take-home pay starting in January. What's interesting is that the president might actually put off signing the bill until January. We'll see, of course, later today and over the next 10 days or so. But he might delay, because after all, there is a it'll still take effect in January, but there are some automatic cuts that could occur to Medicare that the law might trigger. And so that's a big concern of the president as well as Republicans. There are some technical things that still need to be adjusted, and we'll see whether or not it actually occurs. But I'm pretty optimistic as to the results that it's dealing, that it's bringing about for those people who are making somewhere between $30,000 and $130,000. They're the real beneficiaries of this. And, of course, the people under $30,000 of household income pay zero income taxes anyway, zero, not one penny. And, of course, even now up to $50,000 for a family of four, that standard deduction is going to reduce their federal income tax to under $1,000. So that's an exciting proposition for a lot of folks.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer was not impressed with the plan and predicted Republicans would regret their efforts. Let's hear from Senator Schumer.
Republicans will rue the day they pass this bill, and you can bet Democrats will make sure of that. We are going to continue to hammer away at why this bill is so unpopular, at why what the Republican rhetoric and the reality is so far apart.
Arvina, do you agree with Senator Schumer that the GOP will rue the day they pass these cuts?
Oh, definitely. You know, as Mr. Hemmerning said, that the GOP is going to push this legislation and through like public relations channels. You know, I sure hope that they do. And because I think that as people see that they have a small impact on their take home pay, you know, they're going to be losing a lot more in terms of social safety net programs, in terms of health insurance. And ultimately they're going to have less money in their pockets. And then after the 8 years, all those cuts expire, whereas the corporate rates are down permanently. We know as well that when these tax rates go down for corporations, they give that money back to their shareholders. They don't necessarily pay it out to the people that are cleaning their buildings or people that are out selling their products. So, I don't see that this trickle-down thing is going to happen except for the people that already have plenty of money.
So you think this tax cut bill is a winning issue for Democrats in the 2018 election?
Definitely. I think this is going to hurt average Americans way more than it will help.
So, Kevin, how do you figure these cuts are going to impact the elections in 2018?
I'm actually glad that people can't see me on the radio. I actually almost burst out laughing when Arvina talked about how it was only the shareholders who were going to benefit. Apparently, she hasn't been watching the news for the last 36 hours. Already over 1 million middle American workers and lower income workers have received over $1,000 bonuses for Christmas in their current paychecks. AT&T, that clip you played, by the way, of Senator Schumer, it was immediately right after that he ripped on AT&T how they were only going to give the money to the shareholders and to the big CEOs. And within 20 minutes, the CEO came on TV, came before his board and said, we are giving $1,000 bonuses to 200,000 of our lower income workers, number one. Number two, that they were going to invest over $4 billion in new infrastructure. That infrastructure has to be put in place by middle American workers. That's what this is all about. It's about putting money back into corporations' hands. Corporations are people who legally organize together. The money isn't the government's, by the way. Apparently, people don't remember history. The founding fathers in the Federalist Papers, everybody from Adams to Jefferson, Washington, these folks were not clamoring for income taxes or any taxes. It's why we fought the revolution, ladies and gentlemen. It was because the British were putting in every type of tax, from the Tea Act to the Stamp Act and all the other things. And it's not the government's money. It's our money. As people, whether we own businesses or whether we own farms or whether we work in businesses or farms or are self-employed, it's our money, not the government's money. And apparently people on the other side, the Democrat side, don't recognize that. It's not your money. Leave it in the hands of the workers.
The tax plan also eliminates Obamacare's individual mandate. That's the penalty imposed on people who don't buy insurance. President Trump said that essentially kills Obamacare. How big a blow do you think that is to the health care law? Kevin, first you, and then I want to hear Arvina on this as well.
No, Arvina mentioned something about people were going to lose benefits. This was a tax cut bill, not a benefits cut bill. Nobody loses anything here. All that happened with the elimination of the individual mandate, it removed the tax penalty for people who voluntarily, by the way, would choose not to buy the health care program of the federal government. That's all it does. And so the president's wrong in his language. He's going to, of course, claim victory and should for removing a penalty to do something that people didn't want to do in the first place. And so now you're going to have a lot of people choose not to buy health insurance. Now we're going to see exactly how unpopular the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, has been when you see how many people drop out of the program voluntarily. It's not because they wanted to buy it in the first place.
Arvina, what's going to happen with the individual mandate being a thing of the past?
Well, you're going to find people that are healthy, that maybe don't participate in, dangerous professions or hobbies. They're not going to sign up for healthcare. And that is a thing that we know drives the prices down, so that the people that need it, the people who may have history of illness, maybe somebody who has had cancer, their rates are going to go up. And that's just how it goes. That's why the individual mandate was put into place, period. And as we heard in the piece right before we went to air, record numbers of people are signing up for the Affordable Health Care Act. And, you know, the people that have had it have been very pleased. We just heard that 20 minutes ago. You know, so while that particular bill doesn't say, well, this is what's going to raise the rates, the actual action of it is what will cause those rates to go up. It's just cause and effect. It's very simple.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got some phone callers who want to talk about taxes. We will take those calls, and we'll continue on with our guests and with you. This is The Morning Show. This is our week in review on The Morning Show. Kevin Hermaning and Arvina Martin are my guests, and you can join us at 800-642-1234. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. This is the Ideas Network of WPR. It's our week in review on The Morning Show. I'm John Munson. Arvina Martin is one of our guests. She's a member of the Madison Common Council and former chair of the American Indian Caucus for the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Kevin Hermaning is also with us, the chair of the Republican Party of Marathon County and a financial planner from Wausau. We're talking about the week's top stories. Of course, the passage of the tax bill, probably one of the biggest stories of the week, if not the biggest. Some people would say it was the biggest. We have some callers who want to talk about that. Let's take one right now. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, go ahead.
Good morning to all of you. Thanks for the guests and happy holidays to all. I would like to remind Mr. Hermaning that it wasn't the founders weren't necessarily quite so concerned about the taxation part of the equation. It was the without representation. That was the
I agree.
The fact that they never had a vote. And again, the very people that lobbied the most for these tax cuts weren't us undecided that voted for Trump. It was the corporations. It was the people with big money sitting offshore. I mean, I will benefit. My wife and I will benefit. I'm more concerned about the well of the country and the deficit potential that this bill incurs. And neither of you addressed that I'm aware of, but I did have the phone down while I was online with the screener. So, again, thanks for everything, and you know, don't always construe the facts.
All right, Tom, thanks. Thanks for that call. We haven't touched on the deficit portion of this. Some estimates have this ending up causing about $1 trillion deficit. Where are the deficit hawks on this tax bill? Kevin, first you, and then Arvina.
The deficit hawks are confident that the growth in the economy is going to grow the gross domestic product. To the point that the bill is going to end up being deficit neutral within perhaps, I should say debt neutral, really, as far as adding to the overall debt within 7 to 10 years. The truth of the matter is that just like individuals go out and take mortgages in order to buy a house, they're investing in their future. Businesses do the same thing. And in this case, the government's decided that allowing people to keep more of their money and spend it on the things that they want is going to grow the economy. The nation of Ireland had a 40% corporate tax rate several years ago. They lowered it to 12.5%, one of the lowest in the European area in Europe, and their economy grew by 2.9 times. And there's a big expectation on the part of Republicans. We're already seeing companies not giving it to the CEOs, not giving it to the tax cut to the dividend shareholders through dividends. That will happen, no question about it. But it's the other folks who are going to benefit as well. And they're going to go out and spend that money. They're going to put new roofs on their house. They're going to add to college savings accounts. They're going to buy new cars. People are going to spend money that they now have, you know, anywhere from $80 a month to a couple hundred or maybe $1,000 a month makes a big difference in people's lives.
Arvina, what do you think? Is that economic growth actually going to take place? Will this tax cut pay for itself?
Well, it sounds like the Congressional Budget Office doesn't really agree with that assessment. I'll just leave it at that. It doesn't seem likely that this is going to spur the economy that much to save or to add trillions of dollars. It's just not a great bet.
Let's take another call.
By the way, it's amazing to me all the people on the other side who are now concerned about the deficit when President Obama's legislation didn't do anything to grow the economy, but certainly grew the deficit and the debt by doubling the debt over the last 8 years.
We can certainly say the same about the other side, who were very concerned about deficits previously and now don't care at all.
Let's take another call here. Annie is with us, or Ann, rather, is with us from Campbellsport. Ann, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, I just heard that last comment about Obama, which irritated me. He saved our economy from a major recession, and give him credit for that. But my main point is Kevin's comment about the health care mandate. Of course, people, healthy people, don't want to buy health insurance. When they don't buy it and need health care, they end up in the emergency room, which we pay for. Obamacare was very successful. The Republicans did everything they could to sabotage it, and they're succeeding at it. Shame on you. Thank you.
All right. Annie, Kevin, you want to respond to Ann's comment?
Well, people should not be forced by a government to do anything. People should not be forced to buy health insurance. If emergency rooms decide to admit people who need care, and I think I'm unaware of an emergency room of a hospital of a medical facility refusing to render care, it is true that somebody is paying for it, but it's not being paid for in a confiscatory way by taking tax dollars away from people. It's being paid for by folks who otherwise are using those same medical facilities through their personal health insurance decisions. And that's what's misunderstood about Obamacare, about health care in general. The health care system in 2009 was only broken on the pre-existing conditions issue. It wasn't broken on anything else. And yet the government came along in 2009 and 10 and decided to ruin the part of the economy that represents about 11% of the overall economic engine of our country. And it's ruined it to the point that we, during those 8 years of President Obama's administration, we saw not a single quarter, not one, where GDP growth was 2%. Already this year, three different quarters, all three quarters, GDP, gross domestic product, economic activity, exceeded 3%. It's going to go to 4 or 5 over the next 2 years due to this tax cut. That's what's going to grow the economic engine and pay for this tax bill.
Arvina, what about the listener's comment about the insurance mandate?
Well, I mean, she's right. You know, we know that people that are uninsured, emergency rooms do not turn people away. If somebody needs help, they will get it. And unfortunately, if someone has a condition that could be easily fixed with preventative care, which is much less expensive, these things can spiral out of control and to the point where it becomes very expensive for, anybody who has insurance. Yes, for those folks, their rates go up. And so that's, again, money out of their pockets. But they need it because the alternative is even worse. And then the person who has had the services through the emergency room or through the hospital who needed it, whether it was to save their life or help them get better after being very sick, they have to take on a bunch of bills as well that maybe they can, maybe they can't afford, you know, and ultimately more people are paying for more intensive services, things that could be taken care of through preventative care.
All right, let's move on from the tax bill. Lots more to cover here on the Week in Review. One of the stories that emerged this week was a rumor that was going around that House Speaker Paul Ryan might hang it up after the 2018 midterms if Congress could pass a tax plan. But he shot those rumors down this week, telling his Republican colleagues in a speech that he's not leaving his job. Another House member said Ryan told the conference that there's a lot more winning to be done. He reportedly got a standing ovation. Arvina, where would you say Ryan's stock is right now?
Dropping. The tax bill is wildly unpopular, not only nationwide, but in the first congressional district in Wisconsin. You know, a lot of his constituents are saying we haven't seen Paul Ryan in years. He hasn't had a town hall in ages. So they're feeling like he's not listening to them.
Kevin, how do you feel about the job Ryan is doing as House Speaker during the Trump presidency?
Yeah, so a lot of conservatives were disappointed during the presidential election last year that they felt that Paul Ryan abandoned President Trump on the campaign trail. And I would say to you that probably Paul Ryan, Speaker Paul Ryan, is as equally important to the operation of our government today and the passage of this tax bill and what's going to happen next year on entitlement reform, in my opinion, than President Trump. Paul Ryan has really demonstrated leadership here. He's been able to put together a coalition of people who, yes, are deficit hawks and compassionate and concerned about reducing taxes for corporations and individuals. You know, people talk about the individual tax cuts, but really the benefit here is the corporate tax cut because that's what's going to drive the engine here. But Paul Ryan, whether he stays or whether he goes at the end of this current term, has really done a terrific job to bring about the important legislative accomplishment that we just saw happen yesterday and the day before.
The United Nations General Assembly yesterday voted 128-9 to call President Trump's declaration that Jerusalem is Israel's capital null and void. 35 countries abstained, 21 were absent. Ambassador Nikki Haley tweeted on Wednesday that the U.S. would be, quote, taking names, end quote. Arvina, what message do you think the international community just sent to the United States?
I think that the international community was very strongly said that maintaining the peace and order in a very volatile area of the world is more important than the ego of our president, bottom line.
So we assume, Kevin Hermaning, that Haley took those 128 names. So what should the U.S. do in response to that U.N. condemnation?
Well, I think that the U.N. is an organization whose time has passed, an organization that has done not one thing that I can think of since 1948, other than declaring the state of Israel as a nation state. There's been not one positive thing that the U.N. has done until yesterday, and I am so proud. I believe that Nikki Haley, a former governor of South Carolina, could very well become a president someday of this country. Why does the General Assembly of the United Nations feel that it's a good thing to have passed 83 resolutions in the last 5 years condemning Israel and not one against the Palestinian Authority? This is one of the best things that has happened. I did not hear Arvina or anybody else, not one person on the Democratic side, not one, criticize President Obama or President Clinton or President Bush, for that matter, when they said that Jerusalem should be the capital of Israel during their campaigns and during their presidencies. They just never made it happen. This president, thankfully, is making something happen. I really don't care about those 128 countries who obviously don't understand the importance of living in a country, in a world, excuse me, which in which countries ought to be banding together, not continuously looking for opportunities to destroy other nations such as Israel.
Well, I think
exactly
we just
what
saw
the Arab nations and Islamic countries are doing consistently.
I think we just saw 128 nations band together to protect peace in a very, again, a very volatile area. That's precisely what they're supposed to do.
But Arvina, the Palestinians have never been in support of peace. Let's face it, not one time.
Yikes. Wow. Okay.
I think this would be a great time to take a break. We'll come back and reset. We've got some state news to talk about. Lots going on in Wisconsin as well. And let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll have more of our Week in Review. Kevin Hermaning and Arvina Martin are my guests. And we're talking about the top news stories of the week here on The Morning Show. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In It's the Morning Show. I'm John Munson. This is our Week in Review. Each week at this time, we take a look at the week's top news stories from a couple of different perspectives. Kevin Hermaning is the chairman of the Republican Party of Marathon County and a financial planner from Wausau. And Arvina Martin is a member of the Madison Common Council and former chair of the American Indian Caucus for the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. We're getting their takes on the top news stories of the week. Let's take a look at some states news. There was quite a bit of that this week. Governor Scott Walker addressed the Turning Point USA Student Summit on Wednesday. Turning Point is a youth organization that touts fiscal responsibility, free markets, and limited government. Governor Walker was criticized for speaking at the event, which he says he was invited to attend. In a November press release, State Democratic Party Chair Martha Lanning said that instead of focusing on Wisconsin, Walker would be rallying Tea Party crowds, sharing events with white supremacists and advocates of political violence, fake news conspiracy theorists, and right-wing extremists. Walker denied the group has anything to do with white supremacy and said he planned to talk to students about conservative reforms that he enacted in Wisconsin. Kevin, any problem with Walker talking to Turning Point USA?
No, apparently people don't know or have forgotten that the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point's governance board, I'm not talking about the radical students who are on the SGA there, I'm talking about the real adults, decided that Turning Point USA could be approved as a Turning Point USA Stevens Point, UW Stevens Point chapter was in fact a legitimate and important student group. Much kudos there up in Stevens Point to Amelia Hype, who's also the chairwoman of the College Republicans at UWSP, for making sure that the issues continued to get out there and that the adults at UWSP decided to go in that direction. So why suddenly, let me just say that apparently the chairwoman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin decided that, the UWSP government leaders are, I should say UWSP chancellor and others there at UWSP are supporting white supremacists. That's exactly what she's saying in different words.
Arvina, what's your reaction to the governor addressing this group with the likes of Steve Bannon, James O'Keefe, and Donald Trump Jr.?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I think that if you look at that roster of people, there's a lot of faces on there. And a lot of those faces are people who are extremely divisive, who have said very inflammatory things about people that are different from them in any way. And I think that, you know, when you're addressing a group that has been alleged to have ties to white supremacy, you know, that's something that you got to pay attention to. You know, you are the company that you keep. And we see Governor Walker going around and talking at events like this where Steve Bannon is, who has been very happy to, talk down to every single person that he can. And as well, James O'Keefe, who has gotten in trouble for putting together or trying to cobble together false narratives that support his particular viewpoint.
Republican State Senator and U.S. Senate candidate Leah Vukmir said at a WISP politics luncheon on Tuesday that the people involved in the now closed secret investigation into Governor Walker that resulted in her personal emails being seized by investigators should be in jail. A report earlier this month by Attorney General Brad Schimmel showed that emails between Vukmir and her daughter were saved as part of a probe into possible illegal campaigning on state time by Republican office holders. She said also current Ethics and Elections Commission leaders should resign. Arvina, how do you respond to Vukmir's assertion that those former Government Accountability Board members should be jailed?
You know, they were doing their job. They, you know, have a responsibility as people that are serving on the Government Accountability Board, people that have responsibilities, whether they're the district attorneys of their respective counties or not, to investigate possibilities of malfeasance. And that is what they did. You know, we had previously a government accountability board that was considered a model for the nation in terms of being nonpartisan and fair to everyone involved. And that's gone now and replaced it with a much more partisan system to the detriment of our state, I believe.
Kevin, what do you think about what Leah Vukmir had to say?
Well, I completely agree with what Leah had to say, that the Government Accountability Board leaders violated the public trust. It was their responsibility to protect people. They did just the opposite. They went after individuals based on a political as well as personal vendetta. Anytime you have a Republican or a Democrat, it doesn't matter, appointed to anything, of course they're going to bring their political agenda and biases to the post. Not that Arvina should or shouldn't know this, but the State Ethics Board, one of the entities that replaced the Government Accountability Board, along with the Elections Commission, they have an equal number of individuals who are put on the Ethics Board by the Republican Party as well as the Democrat Party. It's part of the state law. And so she just described it, I believe, as essentially saying that the fix is in. But Michael Haas, who I understand is now trying to defend himself, is one of the people who violated the public trust in this regard. And there's no question that his idea that he is going to file some type of claim for slander is ludicrous based on what his role was in the whole John Doe investigation. Yes, the public trust was violated. Senator Vukmir is right to support the Attorney General's call to file contempt charges against those nine individuals.
And just Kevin, we'll stay with you on this. The Senate committee voted 3-2 yesterday to authorize Attorney General Schimmel to launch an investigation into the conduct of those former GAB members. And Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said he wants Schimmel to take a closer look at all activities of GAB staff named in the AG's report. Election Commission Chairman Mark Thompson said Schimmel cannot be trusted to conduct an objective and complete investigation. He asked for an independent review by an impartial fact finder or by a bipartisan fact finding body. And Kevin, I'll toss this back to you. You commented that when somebody is from a political party, that they're going to bring their biases with them. Is the Election Commission's Chairman Mark Thompson correct in requesting for an independent third party review by an impartial fact finder?
He can do whatever he wants, and of course he has the right to do that. But funny, I didn't see his name on the head of a list calling on former FBI Director Mueller to step aside so that a, quote, independent investigation can be done of the so-called Russia probe. These people bring biases just like Arvina does and I do to our messages. We have philosophical positions that we feel very strongly and are passionate about, and so do these folks who otherwise purport to, quote unquote, just do a job on behalf of the taxpayers of Wisconsin. These people who are appointed are no such thing as an independent arbiter of anything.
So what does that suggest then about any investigation that the Attorney General might conduct in this matter? Would that also be partisan?
Well, of course it's going to be partisan. Whether the results bring about truth is what the voters ultimately are going to have to decide at election time. And if the media, including the folks at Wisconsin Public Radio, were doing a true, independent, and full fact-finding effort on their own, not this idea, well, we don't have the money or the reporters or the staff to do it, maybe we'd have the type of great quality reporting and fact-finding by other folks that has come out over the last 100 years. Truth in fact-finding in media seems to have been a lost art.
Arvina, you want to respond to any of that, or can we move on?
Well, you know, I think it's right. I think that Attorney General Schimmel will bring his biases. It's normal. You know, as Mr. Hermaning said, you know, we all have our biases that color the way that we see things. And he brings up Mueller, I'm sorry for mispronouncing his name. And, you know, he brings his biases as well. He's also a Republican. So we don't hear people talking about that much when they talk about, you know, how he is so biased against folks in this particular Russia probe. So that's all I'll say about that.
All right, well, let's move on then. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss told Wisconsin Public Radio in a year-end review this week that at the top of his priority list is a set of bills to increase penalties for repeat criminal offenders. He said if someone commits a crime after they've been released from prison and are on court-ordered supervision, they should go back to prison, period. But he also said that would probably mean having to build a new prison, seeing as how state correctional institutions are already at 130% capacity. First off, Kevin, should Wisconsin increase criminal penalties? Kevin, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay. So should Wisconsin increase its criminal penalties?
Well, I think that when it comes to the law and criminal penalties, that I'm not opposed to increasing the penalties, but I would say that there needs to be a better understanding of the issue of mental illness with regard to our prison population. Repeat offenders oftentimes are mentally ill. I had the very great privilege of being appointed by our sheriff in Marathon County to chair as a citizen member a panel to look into recidivism as well as the overall issues of mental illness and the cost of it in our county. It's not just our county, it's the surrounding ones, and I'm sure across the state as we did our research. There is definitely a treatment issue as it regards to the folks who are suffering from mental illness that needs to be dealt with. Money can be better spent there rather than in building a prison. But if ultimately the costs are, if the results are that we need prison space, yes, we ought to be proceeding in that area.
Democrats argue that increasing penalties doesn't deter criminal behavior and comes with a hefty price tag. Arvina, is that where you're coming from, too? Who's going to pay for a new prison?
Well, I actually want to say I think we found something that Mr. Hermaning and I agree on. I think that mental health issues play a very huge role in who is incarcerated, who is ends up being a repeat offender. And we know that just throwing someone with mental health issues into jail does not help. It keeps them off the streets, so to say, for a little while, but they need treatment. They need help in order to function the best that they can. And we need to work a lot harder on treating these mental health issues and not just putting everybody in jail. We also know that we have some giant disparities in terms of race and who is incarcerated, and we need to work on programs for people who are coming out of prison, out of jail, so that they can help get their lives on track and that they can provide for themselves, they can provide for any family that they have, without having to resort to crime, because a lot of people get stuck in this cycle where, you know, they aren't able to access housing because of a criminal record. They aren't able to access a job. So they do what they have to do to survive. It's very unfortunate. And I think that if we support folks in particular who are returning from prison or incarceration, that we'll see less repeat offenders.
Kevin, the Speaker Voss says we probably are going to need to build a new prison. Do you support the idea of a new prison in the state? And if so, how do you think, what would be the best way to pay for it?
Well, frankly, I think that general purpose revenues is the source of payment, quite frankly. But so long as the other options have been exhausted as far as how we can treat people or provide care for people or ultimately those who commit violent crimes and really shouldn't be on the streets, you know, we've got all levels of prisons in the state. We became a resource that other states used temporarily and other cities, even Wisconsin in the northern part of the state, where people were transported, and it made it difficult for people in Milwaukee, for example, to visit their loved ones who were incarcerated. But we also leased our space in the past. Maybe that's a temporary fix, But I don't see that as a positive over time, certainly. But it would be GPR, general purpose revenues, that would ultimately provide the revenue source for the new prison if we went in that direction. And it's interesting. I agree with Arvina that solving the issues related to mental health is an area where there's a lot of common ground on both sides of the political aisle and among independents, who are people who purport to not have a philosophical or a position, I should say, politically. But there are a lot of challenges in that area as well. We have certainly changed the law as a result in the past with regard to being able to report somebody or put them into a place where they wouldn't harm themselves. It's very difficult for somebody other than the individual himself to actually self-report. So there are a lot of challenges here as it relates to the issue of incarceration and a new prison and how to care for repeat offenders especially.
And the last issue on our list, and hopefully we can get through this very quickly, an assembly committee passed a bill this week that would revoke the licenses of repeat drunken drivers. Kevin, do we need to do this to combat our state's drinking and driving problem?
Well, most of the time we read about repeat offenders, they're driving without authorized licenses or current licenses anyway. So I'm not saying that it's a misguided bill. I'm just simply saying that it doesn't seem to have had much effect.
Okay.
So I don't think that that's really the issue here at all.
Arvina, will revoking licenses help reduce drunken driving or just lead to more people driving without licenses?
I think that we're going to be ending the show on another agreement. I think that revoking licenses seems like it would be a good option. But, you know, people are going to drive and they're going to drive without licenses, without insurance. And that's an unfortunate reality in the world in which we live.
We've got about a minute here, so since it's the weekend of Christmas, I'll ask Kevin, you first, and then Arvina, what your Christmas wishes are for Wisconsin and the nation. We've got a minute left.
Well, Arvina and I just ended the discussion or debate this morning on two areas of agreement, so my wish now is that Arvina would see the light with regard to the tax bill.
Arvina?
You know, I just hope that, we can all talk to each other like grown-ups, and that we can all work together on getting things going in our state, in our country, and really work together. We are all in this together, and we need to help each other out.
Okay, well, I think we better end this before it becomes a Frank Capra movie. thank you. Thank you both to Kevin and Arvina for a lively discussion this morning. These Friday morning get-togethers are always great for getting my pulse into the aerobic zone. really appreciate you both spending time with us this morning. Kevin Hermaning, chairman of the Republican Party of Marathon County and a financial planner from Wausau. Arvina Martin is a member of the Madison Common Council and former chair of the American Indian Caucus for the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Thanks to both of them, and happy holidays to you all. This hour was produced by Bill Martins and Chris Molina, with technical direction provided by Michelle Good. Thanks to everybody who helped make this week such a good one for me personally on the morning show. I have to tell you, this morning show crew is really something to work with. If you ever get to be a talk show host, you should pray that you get a crew this good. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's been my pleasure to be with you this weekend, or this week rather. I hope you all have a great Christmas. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.